Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most American podcast network.
Well, she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they ask her to focus on sand.
Hey, what's Pac-Man, everybody? Welcome to the Cynical Cartoons podcast, where today I watched Mars Needs Moms with my friend Chloe Tinney. Chloe uses she, her pronouns. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at StopTweetingMia. Thank you for listening to the Cynical Cartoons podcast for another week. And as always, I'm your host, Mia Marchant. My pronouns are she, her. And I'm here if you need to talk.
Wonder if you'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on Mars?
Did you remember your mocap suit? Because that's really important that we're able to capture all the movements.
Damn it.
From this conversation.
No, I think it's in the washer right now. You have to remove every one of the orbs
right.
from the suit before
wash
you can
them
wash
each
it.
Separately in the dishwasher. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
the orbs are dishwasher safe, thank God.
I guess that we'll just release the audio version of this podcast if we can't do all the mocap
okay.
stuff.
I mean, we were both planning on looking like Cats from the movie Cats today.
Oh my God. You saw Cats, right? You did see Cats.
I have not gotten to
it. Oh my God, Chloe.
I know. I am so behind. Between the two jobs, there's not a lot of opportunity. I'm planning, since tomorrow's my day off, I'm going to see if I can find a showing of Cats and also maybe go see Birds of Prey.
Okay, sure. I would say, ooh, that's hard to say which of those is more important because they're both very good. But especially if you can bring friends. You know, if you're going to go see a movie alone, maybe Birds of Prey is the way to go. Like, that movie will be fine to see alone. You won't feel, like, miserable. If you go see Cats alone, you'll be like, this theater's empty. There's nobody here. I'm so uncomfortable. Judi Dench is looking at me and I don't even have somebody next to me to, like, be like, this is weird, right? Jumping right into it, was this your first time seeing Mars Needs Moms?
I want to say yes. I don't know. It feels like a weird fever dream where I feel like I watched it on TV at one point or like caught the ending of it because parts of it felt familiar, but it is a weird ass movie.
They spent $150 million on this piece of shit and it lost so much money. It's incredible.
So much money. They didn't even make like a third of it back.
It's a very strange movie. It's a very boring movie, actually, when you watch the film itself. But aside from like the story itself, let's talk about the behind the scenes stuff for a little bit. Because that's the most interesting thing about Mars Needs Moms. That's the only thing that anybody knows about it, right? Is that they cast Seth Green in a mocap, like Polar Express style movie about a kid whose mom gets taken to Mars and he has to go get her back. And he did like all of the mocap and all the voices and everything for this movie. And then in the last minute, they were like, this is creepy. We have to replace him with a real kid, but only his voice, not his movements. So,
or his face.
No,
it looks he is the mini me version of Seth Green in the movie, and it's terrifying. They kept all of his mid-30s wrinkles and
yeah,
like, what
it's
every
it's,
single expression. I'm like, oh God, what is happening?
It's so bizarre, and it's like I was looking into it, trying to find anything about him talking about publicly being disappointed by this choice or anything like that, because it's so strange. Like, they kept all the mocap of like Seth Green being a little 9-year-old boy running around, get picked up by aliens, and you're like, oh my God, This is terrifying. And then I found an interview with him online, and this was his quote. He said, "Since I'm a 37-year-old man playing a 9-year-old boy, it was always expected that we get a real kid to re-record Milo's dialogue. And that's what we did. Seth Dusky recorded every line over my vocal performance, using it as a guide for his. He did a fantastic job."
That sounds so by the numbers.
Yeah.
Hitting every single PR mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth Dusky, the kid that replaced him, did a fine job. Like, he's not terrifying in his performance.
No, and I like that they got a kid named Seth to replace Seth.
Uh-huh.
That was important.
And he does emulate a lot of, like, Seth Green's vocal tics, I guess, and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, if the intention all along was to re-record all the dialogue and release the movie with a kid doing it, then why was the first trailer just Seth Green's voice pitched up weirdly to sound like a little kid? Like, this stuff
Wait,
is out
what?
On the internet. Yeah, the first trailer is like Seth Green's voice,
oh,
and it
God.
Sounds creepy. And the second one, they replaced him, and you're like, people complained too much. They were like, this is creepy, and they replaced it. Like, why in a $150 million movie with no stars? It's Seth Green, and it's that other fucking guy who was later on in, like, Fantastic Beasts, but hadn't really done anything at this point. He was just in, like,
yeah.
Fanboys. Dan...
I can't remember his
Daniel.
Name. And then they have, yeah, just Daniel. And then they have Joan Cusack playing Joan Cusack.
For 2 minutes. Yeah, she's barely, I mean, she is the titular eponymous mom.
Yeah.
But she's not in the movie, really.
And then when she is in the movie, you're like, oh, she just kind of showed up to set in a mocap suit and was like, oh, okay, I guess this 37-year-old man is my son now.
Right.
Okay.
Well, okay. So this is the really incredible thing about this movie, right? Digging in deep. I got the Blu-ray for this movie because I found it for like $1.99 at a garage sale one time. I was like, this is exactly what I need to be doing on the podcast someday. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into because the Blu-ray for this movie has, of course, the normal version of the movie. But then there's also like the hellish nightmare edit, which is you just watching literally the mocap process. Like, you're just watching literally Seth Green and Dan, whatever his name is, run around in mocap suits and scream and be picked up by men much larger than them and fall and like be thrown around for like an hour and a half.
That is the movie that they need to re-release on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Or at least have it some like bonus section where they're like, okay, here's the original movie. Here is the Peter Jackson extended cut as it was meant to be seen.
Right. And the weird thing, I mean, it's exactly the same runtime and exactly the same, like, you're listening to the same thing. You could watch them side by side and see it. And so it's just very, very strange to see. But I wish that more movies would do that. Like, complete transparency with the filmmaking process. If your Star Wars movie got reshot 60% of it, I'm really, really interested in seeing that original version. I want to see fucked up baby tooth Sonic version of Sonic the Hedgehog more than I want to see
the movie
going to reach theaters.
Yes. In all of its gangster paradise background music glory.
And so I was kind of thinking of it like, what do you think would be the best movie to see in the mocap, like behind the scenes version? And I guess that Cats
Besides
is
Cats.
The obvious go-to. We already talked about that one.
I think I would love to see Avatar, like the James Cameron Avatar, because that was the one that kind of revamped it from the original nightmare that was Polar Express. That was the one that's like, oh, motion capture can actually look okay.
Yeah, and can
I would love
make
to see
sense.
The behind the scenes of that one.
Right.
I would also love to see Polar Express, now that I bring that up. Seeing Tom Hanks play every single character. He was also kind of the Seth Green of that movie where he played the kid, or the motion capture for the kid, and every other Tom Hanks-esque character.
He did do the motion capture for the kid. I didn't know that. Is that true?
I think so.
He's like the main kid.
I'd have
That's
to double
so
check,
strange.
But I'm pretty sure he did.
Okay.
Like, I remember seeing a behind-the-scenes video where it had, like, the dots on his face with the mocap suit and the side-by-side of the kid, and you're like, those don't match up at all, but good effort.
So there is a precedent then for an adult mid-40s or 50s man to come in and play a little boy and then be replaced
yeah.
by a little boy. Okay. All right. That's fine.
It's right. A weird precedent, but I mean,
yeah.
Robert Zemeckis has kind of got his type. The director for this movie also did Prince of Egypt and Fievel Goes West.
Oh, okay. So this is his worst movie then.
Yeah, and then Robert Zemeckis has to be attached because it's the Uncanny Valley motion capture, where it's like Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey and Beowulf.
Well, I guess what I was getting at when I started talking about the behind-the-scenes stuff is that Joan Cusack wasn't even really there. Like, every time that it's a shot with him and his mom together, it's just like an animatic or a storyboard. And then,
what?
And then for the rest of the movie, it's the two guys running around being like, oh, we're pals. We love palling around and stuff. And you're like, wow. So Joan Cusack literally recorded this from a fucking bathtub. And it's like her face kind of like plastered on there. She looks like a Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 character. She's pretty smushed up. It's not good.
I noticed that near the end when she's saying something about like how I'm so proud of you. You can hear like the room tone in the background of all of her lines, and then it slowly fades out as the music picks back up. You're like, right. Oh, she probably very literally phoned this in.
Yeah, I don't really understand how this movie cost $150 million because there's nobody in it.
No, it was probably for every single motion capture thing that needed, like, just them moving up and down a pole or whatever, or every little piece of machinery where they're like, okay, we need pneumatic to... Nope, that's not the word. Never mind.
Well, yeah. So whenever they, like, interact with the prop, it is Dan Fogler and Seth Green interacting with that prop, but they can't use, like, real props because that's not what's going to be in the movie. It has to be, like, a motion capture version. So when Seth Green goes outside and his character goes out to take out the trash, it's a 2-scale giant trash bag because he's supposed to be a little boy and he's only, like, a little man. Like, he's supposed to be 4 inches shorter or whatever. And so it's not even a trash bag, though. It's just like pool, you know, like those pool floaties that you can like hit people with, like the pool snakes or whatever. Yeah, it's
I
those
like that
strung
was
together.
The, like intended use of a pool floaty. That was the first thing you came to. It's like, yeah,
hit people with them. Yeah, well, is that not what they're for? I guess they're for
you're
floating.
Not wrong.
But
I mean, I guess.
You smack people with them, you hit, you know, whatever. So, yeah, it's just like him picking up like a bunch of pool floaties like over his shoulder like it's a trash bag when it's obviously not. And he's like sitting in bed reading a book. And it's like not a book, though. It's just a big felt book. It's like a book made out of felt with nothing inside of it. He's just like flipping felt pages. And you're like, this is nightmare inducing. Like, I'm glad they seem like they had fun because I would have gone crazy.
That is intense. That's probably where all the $150 million went, was them.
The felt children's
we
books.
We can't use props. Yeah. We can't use real things. We have to build slightly bigger versions for Seth Green to interact with. And they're all going to be made of foam and have tracking dots.
Yeah. And it seems like all of the work that he was doing on this movie was like dangerous. Like, he's like, yeah, I did all my own stunts. And I was like, okay, stunts, sure. And you watch the movie, and when you're watching the finished product, you don't think about how often they're, like, falling off of a 10-foot ledge, which doesn't seem like that crazy because they're a cartoon character. And then you see an adult man do it, and you're like, oh, no. Like, Seth Green, are you okay? Or, like his stunt man has to fall down a hill, and his character falls down the hill for 10 seconds. But they can only get 2 seconds of footage of him falling. So the stunt man has to do the fall 5 times. And probably more to get it right. And you're like, this is so much. Like, why did all this effort?
Yeah, I think they had like slight, like small behind the scenes snippets at the very end credits of the movie.
Right.
And that was one of them where they had Dan and Seth making the falling sound effects as their doubles were falling.
Okay, that's insane. That they would have Seth Green off to the side of the screen making the falling sound effects and then be like, yeah, he was never intended to be in the movie voice-wise. Like, what? We just wanted a reference for the kid to know how to scream. Like, this kid actor, they couldn't find a single kid actor that could pretend to scream.
Or, like, watch the footage and go, oh, okay, yeah, I can make something up with that.
Yeah.
No, you have to match it exactly to Seth Green.
Oh, my God. This movie tanked the studio was that made this movie. Like, it was Dunzo. It was a subsidiary of Disney. And they were like, this is a $150 million movie that made $39 million back. Like, bye, bitch.
That is rough.
Yeah. It's a bit much.
I mean, to be fair, it sits so deep into the uncanny valley, there is no way that they can get out even with Mars gravity.
Yeah, it really does. It is creepy looking, and the story doesn't really make a lot of sense why kids would want to see a movie about this. Just the concept of the movie being like, this kid's mom is abducted and he has to go save her. And you see Seth Green in interviews like trying to explain like why this is going to be such a good movie. And he's like, man, I think kids are going to love it because it's like a fun adventure. You know, he's trying to get his mom back, and parents are going to love it because they're going to be like, this kid is in genuine jeopardy and this woman like might die. And it's really empowering to see this kid save her. And you're like, Seth Green, that doesn't make any sense, dude. Why would a mom want to see her kid like almost get crushed every 30 seconds to fucking die? Like, why?
That is parents' favorite genre, is children in trouble. He did his research.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So the IMDb trivia, when I was looking this up, said that the movie title Mars Needs Moms is a play on a movie from the 1960s called Mars Needs Women.
Huh.
Yeah, so Mars Needs Women is about the Martians who need to repopulate Mars. So they come down to Earth disguised as human beings, they hypnotize a bunch of women, and they abduct them up to space. Or at least that's their plan. Maybe they don't succeed because they want to take them to space and rape them and repopulate their planet.
You know, because it was the 60s.
Yeah. And then this movie literally just takes that and is like, what about that concept? But moms, that's for kids. Like, I thought that it was like a Jimmy Neutron situation where they were like, all the parents on Earth are gone. But instead it was like, they want to steal this one kid's mom and use her discipline powers to like program all these nanny bots to train their kids. I don't know.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was weird to me, that they single out specific moms for discipline and control, and she has no control over this child because he doesn't give a shit and
right.
Doesn't care about her. It's like, why did they choose her?
Well, I guess that's sort of the thing, right? Is that they have to choose a new person to program their nanny bots every 25 years. Because they designed a bunch of nanny bots. Okay, this movie's a fucking mess. They designed a bunch of nanny bots.
It is all over the place.
Yeah. They designed a bunch of nanny bots that only work for 25 years, and then they have to get a new brain discipline mom to reprogram them. The last time they did it, they got, what's his name, Gibbler? They got Giblin's mom, and she was like a great mom, and he was a well-behaved kid, and so it didn't work as well as they wanted it to. So this time they were like, let's get a mom whose kid is like a real piece of shit, and she's just trying to pull it together.
Gribble. That's
Gribble.
His name.
That's as stupid
Grimace.
As the two things that I did.
it doesn't
good.
Matter.
Nailed it.
And I know they tried to like make it meaningful later. They're like, oh, his full name is actually George
Gribble.
Gribble or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Stupid. It's just so dehumanizing of this movie to be like, oh, this memory extraction machine's going to take all the discipline out of your mom and put it into the nanny. It's like, what? The only thing that she is to the story of the movie is a mom. Like, she's not conceptualized as a real person, which, like, I get it. The movie's made for little kids, but, like, imagine watching this as an adult. We are adults, whatever. Like, watching
are
this as
though?
An adult woman is like, man, I'm glad that I don't have kids so that I can be just like shoved into this corner of like, you are meat sack discipline machine.
Oh God. That's the title that we need here on Earth is just discipline meat sack machine for whenever we give birth to children.
I thought you meant for the movie.
Oh, no.
It should have been called
discipline
meat sack machine.
Discipline meat sack machine.
Yeah.
Meat sack. Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's hard to say. That's what makes it good, though.
All good movies have to be tongue twisters.
Yeah, like Birds of Prey and the irascible emasculation of Harley Quinn. What's that called? Something like that.
Yeah, no, that was exactly it.
So this movie starts off, right away, we're shown a bunch of alien antics, which is like great because the aliens don't speak English. And so we're just like subjected to like 5 or 6 minutes of these aliens being like, oh, gibble gobble. And we're like, oh, okay.
Okay, so it's that kind of movie. Well, and like the very first living creature you see in the movie is one of the little hatchlings coming out of the dirt. And you're like, oh, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
When I was watching it, I think I literally screamed when I saw that. I went, ah!
Yeah.
What the hell?
They're so creepy and lifeless, which is so fucked up because like watching them behind the scenes, all of the performers that play these little aliens are doing so much. Like
so much.
All of this face acting and they're doing stunts and you're like, this dude just broke his ankle so that this little alien could like crawl out of the dirt and be like, rawr, rawr. Like, this is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, they went above and beyond for things that didn't even matter.
Didn't pan out. Like, they could have just sort of winged it a little bit. So, in the commentary, they were talking about this like it was just, like, a fun fact about the movie. And, like, it was a totally normal thing to say. That all of the alien actors developed the alien language on set as they were doing it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Basically, all the alien performers developed the language in the moment because the production team just couldn't be fucked to do it.
The actors were on set. And they developed their own language as a form of communication, sending signals for help.
Yeah, you play it backwards and it's like, get us the fuck out of here. Robert Zemeckis has kept me locked up in his basement for years and now I'm earning my way out by playing an alien in his movie. But it has to make $120 million back and I know it's not going to.
He keeps us in his basement with no water, no food, and only motion capture suits to wear.
And we're not allowed to speak English in the movie. I taught myself how to talk backwards. But, I mean, it's just so wild because, like, all of these actors are doing so much. Like, it's just so weird that they look so lifeless. Like, it's very disturbing. And it's like,
yeah.
When you watch the behind the scenes, you're like, wow, there's a lot of work here that just went completely to waste because of the technical abilities of the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite Polar Express levels of lifeless, but it's sitting right in that sweet spot where you're like, this could almost look maybe okay if it wasn't so terrible.
See, I don't even know, because when I was watching the movie, I was like, okay, this is like kind of okay. Like, it looks creepy because it's Seth Green on a little boy's body. But aside from that, it looks fine, right, for 2011? And then Reed, my partner, who works professionally in animation, came in and was like, oh no, like, this is so much worse than Polar Express. This is so much worse than anything I've ever seen. And I was like, oh, maybe it's bad. Apparently, I don't know a lot about animation. It's a good thing I don't have an animation podcast or something like that. Like, I fucked up.
There is one thing when I was trying to do like research on the behind the scenes of the movie, the very intro scene with Joan Cusack and Seth, where he's like, they're talking about the broccoli. If you look up this movie, that clip is on every single different YouTube channel. That is the only thing that they have deemed as worth showing to the world.
It was also in both of the trailers. So you can go and watch trailer one and trailer two and like compare and contrast weird, creepy Seth Green pitched up voice to normal little boy voice. Like, you have such a direct comparison. Basically, trailer two is just trailer one with a different voice on it.
So yeah, they pulled a Sonic.
They pulled a reverse Sonic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did the opposite of what Sonic did. But yeah.
It's such a clusterfuck, to put it very kindly.
Yeah, it really is. And I kind of like when like a movie gets to the point that they have to be transparent with their audience and be like, we fucked up, like majorly fucked up. Sonic looks bad. We know he looks bad and they have to change it. Like, when it comes to something like Star Wars Episode 9, you know, we're hearing now about like all these weird like behind the scenes things that may or may not have happened and weird changes. But like, you don't know any of that before you go see the movie. With this one, I feel like, you know, this movie was fucked.
Yeah, you're going in knowing that so many mistakes were made, but there's nothing that can be done. And Disney has decided never to release it in any form other than maybe on Disney Plus if we put in some kind of cheat code or something.
Right. It's sort of hidden in the background. Like, you have to click on another movie and then it's in the special features of Polar Express or something.
You have to pause it at the exact right time code.
Right.
Go up to the top right corner.
There's a 10-digit code. So we haven't really talked about Dan Fogler's character, Gribble, yet. Gribble is strange, to say the least.
I'm fascinated by him. He's a walking 80s reference.
Yeah, he is.
But then he talks about, he's the one that gives the exposition of every 25 years they have this thing where they kidnap a mom from Earth for their robots. I'm fascinated to know what his life was like in that span of time when he was figuring out alien technology, but also still staying a regressed 80s child.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Gribble, is that he's kind of like Peter Pan syndrome, but like if Peter Pan aged into like just an adult man with a little boy's personality.
Yeah. Oh my God, can you imagine that poor child having to go through puberty on Mars with no other like references or anything?
What was his life like? I didn't really think about that. Like, we see him in his flashback later on in the movie, we see him as a little 11-year-old boy with a helmet, and then it like cuts to the future and he's got the helmet in his hands and he's like, yeah, my mom got, she got all the discipline sucked out of her that day and she got evaporated by it. And you're like, okay, I guess, whatever. Would you like eat garbage for 25 years? Oh, you're not going to tell us? Okay, cool. He just like lived in the garbage.
Like, how did he survive? How did he deal with, like, there's so many questions and none of them are answered other than, oh, here's my alien buddy. I don't actually know how to speak his language. And honestly, he does nothing for the plot, but here he is. So that's all you're going to give us about this random 80s child. I don't know.
Also, the movie makes the mistake of not making the story about him like actually growing up and like realizing like, okay, I'm a man now. I have to be an adult human being and take care of this kid who needs me. Instead, he's like, okay, I'm going to make sure this kid's mom fucking dies so that he'll have to spend the rest of his life hanging out with me, Gribble, his new best friend, because I need a friend. All I have is my little robot pal. And it's like, he doesn't really grow up throughout the course of the movie. He just sort of takes charge and like helps Milo along and also falls in love with an alien woman who he desperately wants to fuck.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Watching that, I'm like, oh, they're gonna fuck.
Yeah.
He's so horny for that alien.
Literally the first conversation they have with each other, he's like, oh yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about. And it kind of makes sense. Like, I guess that if he's lived on this planet for this long, he would have sort of like assimilated to it and like seen some things that he finds attractive about these aliens. But like, is this the first woman he's ever talked to? Probably. He's lived in garbage his whole life.
I mean, other than his mom.
Yeah. I don't know. I talk about like Born Sexy Yesterday a lot on this podcast. It's a very much a case of Born Sexy Yesterday, but like a two-way street. Like, they're both Born Sexy Yesterday. I guess,
yeah.
He's not really sexy, but like, it's a situation where like he's a little boy in an adult body and she is like an alien that doesn't know anything about humans except for 20 seconds of a TV show that she watched where Seth Green plays a
hippie.
From
the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was Seth Green too?
That's the only time that Seth Green actually appears in the movie, yeah.
Oh my God.
And so
I didn't even catch that. I was just so fascinated with the fact that they chose to have this alien. Like, yeah, two cycles ago, I watched this TV show from the 70s and found out that they have color. And now I spend all of my secret time painting flowers on everything.
Yeah. And it's like, I guess that her arc in the movie is realizing that Martian culture, okay, there's so much to unpack in this movie. I know that I said earlier there's nothing to talk about, but there's so much to talk about. Martian culture, okay. The Martian upper crust are the cis women.
Oh my God.
Important to state, they're called the cis. The culture has been subdivided into male and female. It's just very sexist in its makings. It's like all of the men are like these disgusting, like, garbage creatures that just roll around in the garbage and, I don't know, masturbate all day.
Probably.
And they're all like hairy and gross. And then the women are like this, like, established society, but also like cold, conniving bitches. And it's like, well, I guess the sexuality doesn't play into it. I guess that all of these aliens are intended to be straight. And that they don't know what love is.
Yeah, it doesn't play into it, but it does in like a weird, I don't, because she, Key is super obsessed with figuring out what the concept of love is. It's so bizarre. And then what was the acronym for what CIS is supposed to stand for?
I don't fucking care, honestly.
It's like,
I don't know.
It's like super secret, I don't know.
Right.
But that line when they're like, oh, it's such a perfect disguise, you'll fit right in. Well, just watch out for the cis. You're like, the cis?
Milo's going stealth.
I lost it. I'm like, this movie became trans representation in a matter of 5 seconds. And then he gets onto the ship in the outfit with the super wide hips and he has to like march like a girl. You're like, oh my God.
But it's just such a strange arc, I guess, for her character, Key, because her whole thing is that, like, she's going off with these two. She sees Gribble, his cheeks blush, and she's like, oh my God, the color red. I've never seen that before. I like it when your cheeks turn red. And then they're down in the caves, and they find a cave painting of Martians in a nuclear family.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, that's what it is. That's this love thing. And you're like, okay, I guess, whatever. It's 2011. Whatever. Who cares? I guess in the course of 25 years, all of these aliens have forgotten what fucking is. But it's like, how are they reproducing? Because they're definitely, no, the Martian babies climb out of the ground.
Yeah, that's never really made clear.
Yeah.
Like, is it that episode of Rick and Morty where he has the sex robot and then...
It is that episode exactly, because I forgot about the sex robot component. All I remembered was like the segmented male and female society.
Oh my God.
Oh, we just... We both just came to the same conclusion. Holy shit, from two different components. Justin Roiland watched the Mars Needs Moms and he was like, I'm going to make an episode about this. Oh my God. This is fucked up. Because
they have the robot moms. They're like, oh no, we can't use them after 25 years. They're useless. We need to get a new mom. And then they throw them into the garbage area where all of them, they throw the men, like all the male babies.
Right.
And...
It's literally the same thing. That's so wild. I mean, this movie's breaking my brain. Because just the concept that, like, they make these robots that they are designed to break down after 25 years. For what reason? Is that, like, some kind of a statement on, like, motherhood and, like, you're useless and then you become a mother for 25 years, you're useful, and then you're done? I don't fucking know what this movie's trying to say.
There's so many mixed messages, and I feel like it's trying to be positive representation but falls into every stereotype.
Well, positive representation of what though?
I have no idea, because they have like the strong female lead stereotype, but also
she's pretty boring.
It's such a weird clusterfuck of so many different ideas that went nowhere.
And I guess it's cool that Gribble as a character is not like made fun of for being fat?
No, he is. He is one time, kind
of. Is he? Okay.
It's when they're in the river. He's like, don't worry, fat floats. And he's like, hey. And the only reason I knew that is because I heard that. I'm like, wait, does it? And I looked it up and yes, it does indeed float.
All right. So learning things from Mars Needs Mom. This is definitely, also I keep saying Mars Needs Mom. It's Mars Needs Moms, even though there's one mom. It's Joan Cusack and that's it.
They need moms in the sense that over the course of one century, they'll have four moms total.
Right. Robot moms, of course. They need hundreds of robot moms reprogrammed. Do you think they would all have, like, Joan Cusack's voice? Like, do you think they'd all be running around like, honey, get on? I don't know what she sounds like.
Just Jessie from Toy Story raising all of these creepy alien children.
Oh, my God. So I was trying to find discussion on this movie online because I usually like to go on Google and I'll find like Reddit discussions, Wikipedia, Twitter threads, and IMDb trivia, all that stuff. And I tried to find any kind of a discussion about Mars Needs Moms on Reddit because I was like, okay, there might be some really cool behind the scenes stuff here. Maybe somebody did like an AMA, I don't know. And one of the only threads that I found was from like a men's rights subreddit.
Oh, God.
That was like talking about how sexist the movie is because it's called Mars Needs Moms. And it was clear that none of them had seen the movie and they had only watched trailers and things. Okay, so it's for men's rights. This is important. It's called, here's the title of the post. It says, Misandric Mars Needs Moms movie completely flops. The title shouldn't have been Mars Needs Moms, but Boys Need Not Come, one executive joked. Their basic premise is like, the movie is bullshit and it hates men because Joan Cusack is a single mother. So they're saying that Milo's dad abandoned him and that his mom had to take care of him. And they're pushing up, Disney is so obsessed with feminism. And then you watch the movie like, okay, so she's not a single mom. His dad is just at work. And then his dad comes home. So clearly none of them saw the fucking movie. Two, this movie hates women. And it hates men. It hates everybody, to be fair.
Yeah. It has no message to send other than everyone is trash.
Yeah, that's true. Oh my God. And it's so traumatizing too. Like the entire movie, this kid's in mortal danger. We get to the end of the movie. Like he's trying to go out there and save his mom. We just watched Gribble's mom die. Like Gribble almost died. And then he goes out there to try and save his mom. He almost dies. She almost dies. And then she takes off her helmet and puts it on him. And she almost dies again. And you're like, man, I hope this mom just straight up dies. Like, that would be the ballsiest. But it's like, this has to be so traumatizing for a kid in the audience whose mom died. Like, the entire movie is about, like, how important it is to have a mom. It's like, well, maybe there's somebody in the audience who doesn't have a mom, or their parents aren't in the picture at all, or they're an adult and their parents died, or, like, I don't fucking know.
Well, and then, like, unrelated to parents in general, they have that whole scene where he's in front of that firing squad wall and Milo recognizes it as such, and then they get there and there's like the black charred outlines of every person that they've murdered in front of that wall.
Right.
You're like, oh, okay, so we're teaching children men are trash, women are domineering, and oh, also here's some information about firing squads.
So eventually they do save Milo's mom and they do reunite the Martian society. Like,
and she teaches them about color and
and free love or whatever. She teaches them about that love thing. And it's kind of incredible because the big villain in the movie, the number one cis het, has like a fucking like a super villain speech, but she's speaking Martian like the entire time. She's not speaking English at all. And she's just like, gibble gobble, gibble gobble gobble. And you're like, why did you get like an actual like experienced improv actor to play this part? Like, we know that's Mindy Sterling. She was in Austin Powers. I've fucking seen her in 200 movies. She's a prolific actor. Why did you get her to come in here and be like, ah!
And then overdub her own dialogue in broken English.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Eventually they do translate. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Only when Milo is wearing the headset that somehow Gribble knew how to make. But he's also a child, but also he has advanced technology.
And also he eats garbage. Like, I don't know.
He's truly the most complex character of our time.
And it's like, the translator does translate, and it does translate Key's dialogue to hippie language, but then sometimes it translates her to broken English, and you're like, which one is it? Is she like a hippie or does she not know how to speak English
right? It's only when she's speaking Martian that it translates to broken English. She can actually speak English, but only hippie English from the 70s.
Okay, and she learned how to speak English from a 20-second clip from a sitcom.
Yes.
Starring Seth Green. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I buy that. That's fine.
I studied the lore really hard before watching this movie.
Yeah, you read the Wikipedia article. I get it. So they save Milo's mom. They go back to Earth. And Gribble, like, they go back to Earth and Gribble has the opportunity to come to Earth. And he's kind of like, nah, little buddy, I think I'm going to go out and have some space adventures. And you're like, dude, I think that you should, like, see what Earth has to offer. What, you haven't been on Earth in 25 years? You don't want a fucking hot dog? Are you kidding me? Like, try alcohol for the first time in your life. What is happening? Like, he's like, nah, bro, I'm going to go out to space and fuck my alien babe. And you're like, yeah, I guess so, dude. Like, meet a human woman. Please. Why doesn't Gribble take Key to a movie? Or buy her 10 seasons of Seinfeld on DVD or something like that. Like, give her more to watch than this 20 seconds.
He doesn't know what Seinfeld is.
You're right. Cheers. Was that around in 85?
Cheers.
Okay. It would have been Cheers. Alf. Show
maybe,
her Alf.
Yeah.
She would love Alf.
Back to the Future, maybe?
Back to the Future would be a good one.
Depending on when he left or was kidnapped or...
So they leave Earth to go off and have some space adventures. And I guess the idea is that somehow Key has gone from like a weird rebel who goes around spray painting everything, like spray painting flower power murals on walls, to now she is the leader of this society who 3 days ago was like a fascistic, segregated society where like the men don't really know how to communicate and the women have all the power and like are militaristic. And it's like now they're going to be like free overnight. What's happening now?
It's such a sudden turnaround. Like after the villain gives her big speech,
right?
She's like, arrest the villains. And then the other Martians take off their visors for like a split second. They're like, you are the villain, and turn their guns on her. And you're like,
right.
How did you make that split second decision?
And it's like, I guess that it's a kid's movie. So it's like, oh, these are the good guys and these are the evil guys and they know the difference. But it's like, well,
yeah,
no, they were raised in like a fascistic, militaristic society where they were raised to think that this is the one way to do things. And so, of course, they would follow their leader, or there would have to be an uprising. There would be a revolt. People are getting guillotined in the streets. Like, this is not going to be as easy as you think it's going to be, especially if you're trying to take the flower power approach to it. Like, there's just a lot of, like, political things going on here that I think the movie didn't really consider.
No, and it takes such, not even like a streamlined approach, it takes such a side shortcut. It's like, okay, here are these really pressing serious issues. We won't even address them, and now they're solved. It's fine.
This movie's a nightmare. It's also a big waste of time. Like, don't watch the movie, but, like, if you see the Blu-ray lying around, like, on the street or at a garage sale for 75 cents or something like that, pick it up and watch the version that's, like, the fucked up nightmare edit. Like, that is legitimately fun, and I do wish that more movies could do something like that. Because it's just like such a power move from the actors involved to be like, this is the most embarrassing thing I've ever done, and I'm going to let the entire world see it because I bet nobody will buy this Blu-ray anyway. It literally looks like Seth Green just like running around in like a giant onesie with a diaper being picked up by men twice his size and then like planted and then like spun around and all this shit. And you're like, wow, he really went for it. Like, there's so much work that went into this terrible, boring movie.
And they had such a good time making it. You can tell that they were having, like, their chemistry on set is really fun to watch.
Right, right. They loved making it, but also they love the movie. Like, if you watch the commentary, Seth Green and Dan Fogler are cracking up the entire time. They love all the jokes. Like, Gribble makes some joke about, like, hey, man, the next time you do that, tell a guy to change his pants first or whatever. And they all loved it. They were, like, cracking up, like, oh, he shit his pants. That's so funny. I don't know. I've met Seth Green. He's like one of the nicest dudes in the world.
That doesn't surprise me. He seems super chill.
Yeah, he's super chill. And I gave him a high five that I don't think that he wanted. Because I was producing a podcast. And I was sitting there next to him on the couch and I was engineering the show. And then he started making like some joke about like Star Trek or something like that. Like, live long and prosper. And he puts up like the Star Trek sign, you know. And he like puts it up to me. He's like smiling. He's like, yeah, yeah. And then I like went in to high five him. And then he was like kind of taken aback by it. I was like, oh, he did not want that high five. Or maybe it was fine. I couldn't really read his expression at the time. Which is weird because he's a very expressive person.
I know. You can see it in the movie.
I mean, he is expressive. The character itself is something else. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3
okay,
style.
Fair.
Yeah. Chloe, do you have anything else to say? Do you have anything else to say for yourself? Why was I about to say that? Do you have anything else to say about Mars Needs Moms?
I mean, other than it being a $150 million home movie for Seth Green and Dan Fogler to make about this really weird kind of off-brand version of Jimmy Neutron that predates a Rick and Morty episode. There was no reason for this movie to exist. Disney kind of had like a Mars kick around the early 2000s where they had John Carter at the same time and both of them flopped. And they're like...
Late 2000s. This was like the early 2010s. Because this movie was 2011. John Carter came out a couple of years later. And the whole thing was they were going to call it John Carter of Mars. But then at the last minute, they were like, kids don't like Mars movies because that other movie flopped. It has nothing to do with the quality of the film. They just don't like movies with Mars in the title. So let's just call it John Carter. And then nobody saw it, which was weird because, like, John Carter's a badass movie.
All right. I'm not entirely sure what the demographic for this movie is because it's super dark for what it's trying to be as a kid's movie. But then, like...
It's not really funny to, like, an adult audience or a kid's audience, I don't think. People would find it funny. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it was made for Seth Green and Dan Fogler.
Yeah, that makes sense. They get together and watch it every week, and they're like, dude, this movie holds up. I know, man. I know. This movie totally holds up, right?
And they have that secret cut where Seth Green's dialogue was not cut out. And then they have the side-by-side of the motion capture at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. This movie was in 3D when it released, too. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
That's a mistake. This was like a big 3D push, and nobody saw it, so... That's Mars Needs Moms. What a film. Well, Chloe, thank you for joining me on the podcast this week. Where can people find you online?
I am on Twitter at It's Chloe Now, or you can follow my art account at CTinnyArt. That or Instagram, I have the same handles, and those are pretty much the ones that I frequent the most.
I'm on Twitter at StopTweetingMia. Thank you for listening to the Cynical Cartoons podcast for another week. And as always, I'm your host, Mia Marchant, and I'm here if you need to talk.
It's a movie that I think both kids and parents will be able to relate to. It's a fun adventure for kids because the main character is a kid. And for the parents, you are watching this genuinely terrifying situation that your child, you would imagine, could ever be in. I think it's something for everybody.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.